Today I'd like to welcome to the PodMD studio neurosurgeon Dr. Jeremy Russell. Dr. Russell's specialty involves expertise in cerebrovascular surgery, skull-based neurosurgery, and spinal surgery. Today we'll be discussing the topic of sciatica. We do hope you enjoy this podcast, but please remember that the advice here is of a general nature and is not intended as specific advice about a given patient. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the doctor, not PodMD. If you do have a patient on whom you require specific advice, then please seek advice from a colleague with appropriate expertise in that area. Jeremy, thanks for talking with us on PodMD today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me again.
The topic of today's discussion is on sciatica. So, Jeremy, can you describe for our listeners what sciatica is?
So, sciatica, we're talking about pain through the leg predominantly. It's the lay term is sciatica. It's actually got nothing to do with the sciatic nerve, oddly, but nonetheless, everyone refers to it as that, so it's probably easier to keep it that way. It's truly called radicular pain. More often than not, it's associated with back pain. It can also be referred anywhere from the lower back into the hip, into the groin, into the buttock region, etc. And that's all the referred component of the pain, which isn't the true radicular pain. The radicular pain is the pain that shoots the whole way down the leg typically, or it depends really on which nerve is involved as to where the pain will go. And it's pretty reproducible. There is a saying, L1 to the groin, L3 to the knee, L5 to the foot. So in the inguinal region is L1. I don't think I've ever seen it. That's more referred pain typically, and that can be discogenic in nature or from the facet. Or alternatively, you've also got to think of things like hip disease or tendonitis or other, you know, sports exercise type stuff. L2 goes to the medial mid-thigh, again, rare as hen's teeth. I think I might have seen it once. L3 goes from the hip across the anteromedial leg into the knee, sometimes a little bit just beyond, and that is pretty common. L4 is a little bit more lateral and goes into the bony shin, but not as far as the ankle. L5 runs down the back of the thigh, the posterolateral calf, the dorsum of the foot, and typically into the first and second toes, into the top of the big toe. And S1 radiates the whole way down the back of the leg, so posterior thigh, posterior calf, through the heel and into the sole of the foot, and more typically the outside of the foot, so involving the fourth or fifth and fourth toes, but on the inferior aspect. And they're pretty reliable as to the indicator as to which nerve is involved. I find it really critical that you nail this with the patient. You have to be really, really prescriptive. And if they don't answer it how you want, you really have to push or, you know, force it out of them, because 90% of the diagnosis is made in listening rather than anything subsequent. The radicular pain is typically classified as a sharp electric shock or stabbing type pain that radiates the whole way down the leg, typically from the hip region down to the foot rather than from the foot up. Occasionally people do describe it that way. And often there is associated paresthesia or tingling and numbness in the same distribution. So that's what we more commonly see. It is more often than not an acute on chronic thing. So most people have got a history of some degree of back issues, long-standing, and they tend to fluctuate. More often than not, it's just back pain, lower back pain, and that's due to a bulging disc or a bit of a worn-out facet, etc. But that obviously is a marker for degenerative changes in the region, and if that then worsens and ultimately puts pressure on one of the nerves, then that's when you get the sciatica.
And how would a patient initially present with sciatica?
More often than not, there is an associated back pain, but by no means is that necessary. Some people have no back pain at all and just present with a pure radicular leg pain. And as I said, it's the quality of the pain, so it's a neuropathic pain. So it's not an arthritic pain, which is generally described as, you know, an aching, throbbing type pain. It's more of it's a nerve pain, so it's more electric shock quality, sharp, shooting, stabbing. They're more the words that patients use. So it's in trying to differentiate a neuropathic pain rather than an inflammatory pain, for example. And often it is precipitated by putting weight on the area. So standing, especially lifting, bending and twisting, poor seating posture. So when you sit down, and everyone's guilty of this, you normally sit down initially with quite a good posture, but almost inevitably slump forward. So that the biomechanics in your spine, it puts more pressure on the front of the disc when you do that and pushes the disc backwards, and that's where the pathology is. So slumping typically exacerbates the pain. And I mean, patients don't generally volunteer this, but if you ask them to, if you sit up and really push your pelvis forward and have a good seating posture, that often improves or maybe even alleviate the pain. And then lying down often helps, but not always. If they have a really large disc, or if they rupture the disc and have what's called a sequestrum, which means that you actually, part of the internal nucleus, it's called, the disc prolapses out and floats free in the canal, and it can be excruciating. People come into ED, they can't sit, they can't stand. I've heard people come into the rooms, they lie down in the middle of the consulting floor, they're wailing, they're moaning. It can be really nasty, nasty pain.
So are there any warning signs or red flags a GP can look out for?
Not so much in trying to predict will they end up with a radiculopathy or a sciatica per se. It's more keeping an open mind to other things that can be really dangerous. So the most common one and most feared one is something called quarter equina syndrome. And that's where you have a very large disc prolapse that occupies the entirety of the central canal and puts compression on all the nerves within the canal. Now, the motor and sensory nerves, i.e., you know, the ones that I've said L1 to S1, are fairly robust. Certainly can have weakness with them, and a foot drop is a not uncommon presentation. The more feared complication is the lower sacral nerves, so S2, 3, and 4, supply sphincter and bladder function. And they are far less tolerant of compression, and patients often present with inability to void, or even sometimes incontinence, but generally speaking, it's more inability to void and hence pain from a distended bladder. Or sometimes it actually can be painless if they've really damaged the nerves. And also sometimes incontinence of bowel, but again, that's less common. If they really have a bad one, they have complete patulous, their anal sphincter ceases to work and they thus don't retain anything. So that's quarter equina. I think all doctors are aware of it. That is a true spinal emergency. The longer the patient goes from onset of symptoms to us fixing it, which is a surgery to decompress the area, the less likely they have of ever regaining that function. That's an example. If I have a patient come in and I get the registrar call me at 3 a.m, I come in at 4 a.m. to do that operation. So it's not one you wait on. Well, certainly I wouldn't want someone to wait on me. Typically it said you need to do it within 48 hours, but I would tend to just get out of bed and fix it immediately. So that's probably the main one that most people are concerned about. Other ones, red flags, is infection. So obviously fevers, typically it's more localized back pain rather than the leg pain, although you can have the leg pain, but they would generally more complain of the back pain issues, and it's been increasing in time. Obviously then you've got to consider things like immunocompromise if they're diabetic or on chemotherapy or more immunosuppressants, I guess, these days. The elderly are more susceptible, IV drug users, etc. Those kind of things should at least run through your mind, if only to exclude them. And then finally, cancer. So metastasis to the spine is very, very common. Typically, it's within the vertebral body, but then that predisposes to vertebral body collapse. And again, it's more of a back pain thing. So the lumbar region, or the thoracic region of the spine, is the most common for this, then lumbar, then cervical. But if they do get a collapse, they'll have a sudden onset of pain. Often, though, they've had a niggling lead-up of pain, but the sudden onset when the bone collapses, because it's a pathological fracture. And then depending upon the degree of collapse and neural compromise, that they may or may not have accompanying neurological deficit, etc. So they're really the main ones that need to be thought of in this setting. But by far and away, 99% of the time, it's just going to be simple degenerative disc disease with compression on a singular or a couple of nerves.
And what is the treatment or management like for sciatica?
So conservative management is always ideal where possible. So things that are not amenable to that are any of the nasty. So quarter equina, infection and malignancy is obviously not a conservative condition. Similarly, if they've got a true foot drop, so if they say, I was walking fine this morning and I now can't lift my foot up and I'm dragging on the ground, that is not a conservative management. That is, let us know immediately and I'll take them to theatre again that day, unless it's a common peroneal nerve or other cause, obviously. But for the vast majority who've got, you know, mild, moderate pain, it's avoiding stresses such as heavy lifting, and I would typically say no more than 2 kilograms for the first couple of weeks. So really they're not lifting much at all. Avoid bending and twisting where able. You know, to a degree, you still need to do it. Sometimes for more elderly people, I recommend them getting a pair of the pickup sticks. So it's like a little grippy handle with a long stick and then a claw at the end of it to prevent bending over as much as possible. Then the next step is typically medication. So simple, I mean, paracetamol won't do much. Anti-inflammatories will help to a degree, but to be frank, if it's a proper sciatica, it's not going to touch the sides. Generally, it's a neuroleptic agent. Now, the most common one I get see being prescribed is pregabalin or Lyrica. I'll use this little space to plug that I can't stand Lyrica. It has a host of side effects, a really bad side effect profile, I should say. Its efficacy is nowhere as good, and that's borne out in multiple trials. It is associated with significant weight gain, which is almost always a major pre-existing factor for spinal patients. There are significant mental health issues. A lot of people have severe reaction to it. And it just doesn't work as well as good old-fashioned amitriptyline. So the studies bear this out time and time again. It's cheaper. It works more often. It has a lower side effect profile. So I spend a lot of time swapping people from Lyrica to amitriptyline. Now, it doesn't always work, and some people, Lyrica is better. But majority of the time, I would start with amitriptyline at 12.5 milligrams at night. I generally get them on that for 2 weeks because the side effect profile generally is dry eyes, dry mouth, constipation, some lethargy, and a bit of a foggy head. And the key is to start slowly and go up. If you hit them with a high dose at the start, they'll just come straight off it. So 12.5 milligrams at night for 2 weeks, then increase it to 25 milligrams. You must warn them that it doesn't work immediately. It often takes a few days or a couple of weeks to work. So if they notice after 5 days, it hasn't done anything, to give it time. I generally say if it hasn't had any effect by a month, then you can stop it. There's no point being on it. And then trialing other medications, then you know, Lyrica is reasonable. Gabapentin works quite well. If the patient has a coexisting anxiety or depression, which is not uncommon, duloxetine is really good, typically starting at 30, going up to 60 milligrams. The other ones, there's a host of them, but that should take care of the vast majority. There's been recent changes in the pain guidelines. So opiates are now, I think, a 6th-line medication. I think we've all been made cognizant of that more so recently with a lot of the media conversation, but really that should be last case scenario and very rarely prescribed, in my opinion. I'm a bit skeptical of physiotherapy in the immediate setting. I think it definitely has a course further down the track, but I think they're better to get over their pain to a degree. Short course of steroids, so prednisolone, 50 milligrams for 5 or 7 days, then drop it down to 25 milligrams for again 5 or 7 days, then stop. I pretty routinely offer a proton pump inhibitor in conjunction with that because it can upset the tummy, obviously. And lifestyle modification as described. At this point in time, unless there's any of the prior red flags, I don't bother ordering a scan unless there's overt weakness. 80% of people will fix themselves in 12 months. So that was the SPORT trial in the 80s. So they did a trial looking at conservative management versus surgical management. And at 12 months, 80% of people got better. Now, they were a bit more miserable at the start. So it doesn't work for everyone. But certainly, that's the figure that I quote people. If it's persisting, then you can trial nerve root injections. To be frank, they have no long-term efficacy. I've stopped doing them if I am happy that I know which nerve is involved. They will work typically anywhere from 4 hours to maybe a week if you're lucky. Occasionally you'll get the unicorn that goes longer. And again, there's a lot of literature to back that up, so I've largely stopped doing that. It's more in the case where I'm not sure if it's... So by this point, you've now got an MRI, there's compression of multiple nerves, and I'm trying to tease out which nerve it is so that I can plan a minimal operation. And then the nerve root injections can be very helpful. If you're not sure, is it an L4, is it an L5? I would then order an injection on the nerve that I think is the most likely culprit, gauge their response to that. If they say, oh, you know, even for 6 hours, oh, doc, my pain was great, disappeared, back to normal, and it came back, that's absolutely what you want because now I know it's L5. If they said, on the other hand, did nothing, then it's probably L4. And then sometimes they'll go, well, yeah, 30, 40% better, but I still had a fair amount of pain here. Then it can be both nerves, and in which case then I tailor my operation to address both nerves, not the singular. So I'm always looking for a way to minimize surgery if we do get to that. And that really is a conservative management. I would suggest 6 weeks is very reasonable. Rarely will I operate on someone under the 6 week time frame, unless they're one of those patients who literally you can't get out of the hospital because they're in such extreme pain, or they have a significant neurological deficit, such as, you know, a partial foot drop or a complete foot drop.
Jeremy, can you tell us what imaging should be done?
If conservative management looks like it's not going to work, or you have concerns about the other red flags, then an MRI is the scan of choice. To be frank, a CT is, in my opinion, a waste of time. I never will manage someone on a CT. And in fact, if you come to see me in the rooms for this, my secretaries will organise an MRI of your lumbar spine before you even see me. So although it's cheaper and easier, long-term, I think it's a waste of time. So you're better off just going for a simple lumbar MRI, and that involves usual T1 and 2 sagittal and axial slices. And that shows the soft tissue anatomy in exquisite detail, if it's a decent MRI, and most of the larger companies do very good jobs. That really is the only imaging that you need. Ultrasound has no part to play. I've already touched on CT. Nerve conduction studies, etc., I reserve more for unusual cases where I'm concerned that it is not emanating from the lumbar region, and that will be after an MRI, and the MRI does not show any neural compression. And then, you know, you may be thinking about a common perineal nerve dysfunction, or is there a nerve tumour, schwannoma, etc., etc. So that's where nerve conduction studies come in. But really, yeah, the MRI is the basis of the investigations.
And when should a GP refer?
So typically following failed conservative management. So either as stated previously, and I'll always harp back to this, if you have any red flags that you're worried about, and just to reiterate, so that's cauda equina, concern of spinal infection or malignancy, or a significant neurological deficit, which is typically a foot drop, then they should be referred immediately. And to be frank, I'm happy to get a phone call that day with the patient in front of you. Or they should, if you don't have a particular neurosurgeon that you know, or spinal surgeon, I should say, sorry, then I'd be referring those patients to the ED. That will be only 5% or less of patients. For the majority, conservative management with the modalities that we've described, if they're getting to the 6 week mark and they're really not improving, then that's an indication, I think, to refer. If they're starting to gradually improve, then it really comes down to the patient. I call this a lifestyle disease at that point. You're not going to die from it. You're not going to lose function. But, you know, having constant pain is pretty miserable existence. So if things look like they're going in the right direction and they're happy to see how they go, then they don't need to refer. But alternatively, if things are escalating, if at week 4 they're worse than week 3 and again worse at week 5, then maybe you don't need to wait the whole 6 weeks. You can sort of see where the trajectory is going. Somewhere between the 6 and 8 week mark, if it's really not improving and they're just treading water, then I think referral to a spinal surgeon is reasonable. Still at that point, we're not necessarily going to jump in and operate. But I think having that expert opinion to more than anything assure that there is nothing nasty going on is important.
And what is management like?
If they come and see us and we deem them an operative candidate, again, it really depends on the pathology. More often than not, the surgery is just a simple microdiscectomy. It's a very straightforward operation. It's the most common operation we do. So briefly speaking, it's a general anaesthetic, about a 3 centimetre cut, go down, expose the relevant area, drill away a little bit of bone, and then just remove the disc or the bone that's compressing the nerve. It generally takes me 30 to 40 minutes to do the procedure. Most patients are in hospital only for one night. They go home the next day. They wake up pain-free greater than 90% of the time in the leg, I'm talking. So this doesn't necessarily address back pain. I always make sure patients are aware of that. So really, the key is selecting your patients well, and that, you know, that's true of all surgery. But in a well-selected patient where their symptoms fit a nerve, let's say it goes to the big toe, it's L5, they've got some dorsiflexion weakness of the foot, the MRI shows a nice L4-5 disc, it all lines up, then I'd be saying to that person, you've got a greater than 90% chance of waking up pain-free and having an excellent response. So once they go home, I would generally ask them to catch up with their GP in approximately a week's time to check the wound. I think most surgeons would do internal stitching. Nothing typically would need to be removed. It'd be unusual nowadays to be using staples or even interrupted sutures. It's more to make sure that the wound is healing nicely, it's not leaking, no signs of infection. Bear in mind that a bit of redness around the wound is entirely normal. That's inflammation, it's not necessarily infection. And if a GP is concerned of infection, if they're happy managing it with fluoxacillin or whatever the case may be, that's fine. or even Keflex. But ultimately, if you've got any concerns, we've just operated on this person. We're incumbent to look after them. So never hesitate to call. I much prefer to know about it and say, that's fine, I'm not worried. And often in that setting, I just ask the GP to take a photo and text it to me. And obviously, you know, if they're afebrile and their bloods are okay, then generally I would say don't treat. But ultimately, if you've got concerns, give us a call. Happy to sort it out. That's my job. And thereafter, I generally recommend rest for a while, at least for 4 weeks. Limited lifting, no more than, again, 2 kilograms for the first 6 weeks. And I review the patient typically at the six-week mark. And if all's going well then, I would generally refer for physiotherapy to work on core strengthening and get the back extensor muscles back in tone. And then things such as Pilates, yoga, etc. are really good exercises. I know it's all sort of trendy these days, but they do work for core and flexibility. And from there on, it really depends upon the patient's occupation, how physical it is, as to how quickly I'll get them back into it, etc.
Thank you for your time here today in the PodMD studio. To sum up for us, could you please identify the 3 key take-home messages from today's podcast on sciatica?
Sure. So sciatic pain is a neuropathic pain shooting down the leg into a various distribution depending upon the nerve. Conservative management is generally indicated, but please always remember to think of the red flags being Cordura equina syndrome, infection, or cancer. If there's no significant neurology, then conservative management is indicated with a variety of rest and medication. And typically, if they're not getting there by 6 weeks or they're incapacitated by the pain, then a referral will be appropriate at that point, and whether or not surgery, etc., is required, ultimately we will decide.
Thanks for your time and the insights you've provided.
Absolute pleasure. Hope that helps.